If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
Listening to Can't Stop the Rain from Neil Francis's forthcoming sophomore album, In Plain Sight. That track features Derek Trucks. There's been a palpable buzz over the last little bit for singer-songwriter Neil Francis, whose album, In Plain Sight, is due out November 5th on ATL Records. This Chicago-based piano player is a bit of a throwback in everything he does. From his personal aesthetic to the kind of music he makes, Francis would not be lost in the mid-70s. That isn't to suggest he's just a copycat of people we dig like Dr. John, The Meters, or Alan Toussaint. It's just that Neil gives you an immediate sense of comfort and a distinct memory of what he's going for with his craft. Neil is full of insightful, wonderful lyrics and the chops both vocally and on his instrument to pull off one of the most complete album efforts this year. It was a pleasure to catch up with Neil Francis to talk about his new record In Plain Sight and much more.
I got to tell you, this record is not long enough. It just, it goes by so fast. I mean, you could listen to it over and over again and still not hear everything. They say that you have your whole life to make your first record, and that's, and then it's kind of like hurry up and make another. But when you got off the road in 2019, when you were touring Changes, a few other things happened. Your breakup and your living situation changed. Were you really in the mood to make another record at that point?
I'm always trying to create. It was definitely slow going. I mean, my process sort of took the form of, it was very, very scattered sort of voice memos as I went. And then I keep notebooks of just random stuff. And then I usually collect myself when it's time. I would go into the studio with my friend Mike Novak to make a demo. And then when the pandemic occurred, I had the opportunity to start learning to the process of analog recording on my own. So I had an 8-track and a 16-channel mixer. And so at that time, I could really start to flesh out. I didn't have the restriction of like, I didn't have the limitations of like being in a studio spending money.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I had nothing but time on my hands and I literally needed to work on something. Otherwise I was going crazy, which definitely happened, but I don't know if that answers your question at all.
No, it does. It does. But I'm just curious, like, did you intend, when the pandemic hit, did you intend to take that time to make a new record? Like, was the pressure on from the label or from management to make another record when nothing else was kind of happening? Or was that self-induced?
Well, yeah, it was self-induced. Because I guess when I ended up living in the church in October of 2019, I knew like right away, it was like, okay, I have to do something here. And I remember like a very manic phone call with my manager, you know, pretty shortly after I moved in there. It was like, all right, like by New Year's, I want to record an album in the sanctuary space with like a huge fucking ensemble. I'm sorry if
all
this
good.
Isn't live.
All right. No.
And he was like, dude, like we don't even have a record deal yet. At that time we were deeply in debt. Cause that's just kind of what we had to take on, a lot of debt our first year of touring. And it was kind of just this like, yeah, mania is the best way to describe it. I just knew that it was a special location for me to be. And then when the pandemic hit, it was like, oh, okay. I didn't know how long it was going to last. So I was just sort of, it was a struggle between like not wanting to get out of bed, but also just like needing to work. It was like this very sort of visceral drive to make use of the time, because I didn't know how long it would last. And at that time, we didn't even have the record deal. So the record deal was, or the record was mostly demoed out, aside from a few tracks, by the time that we actually did partner up with ATO that summer.
Must have been cathartic too, not just manic and not just have this visceral desire to do something, but that visceral desire must have also made it quite cathartic to get some of these thoughts and ideas down as well, especially lyrically. I mean, it must have helped go through the breakup process and everything else.
Yeah, that's undoubtedly true. And just the fact that I was working on something, you know, made it easier to just otherwise I'd be, you know, up to something less productive, let's just say.
Nefarious, yeah. But you're sort of over that part of your life now, right? I mean, alcohol and drugs, or cut back, or sobered up a bit?
Well, I'm sober. Yeah. I'm sober from drugs and alcohol, but like, I think I'll get obsessed with pretty much anything. You know, it can be sex, it can be food, it can be cigarettes, it can be coffee, it can be relationship, it can be anything under the sun. So I really had to also, it was like a process of doubling down or tripling down or just forming a discipline during that time around meditation. There was just a long period of adjustment, and it was, the process of songwriting itself is somewhat torturous in itself. So like, I was grateful to be stuck with my drummer during the entire thing, Colin, because he was also going through it, and we were lifting each other up as best we could, you know. So that was indeed a fortuitous situation.
Let's get back to the music and lighten things up a little bit. There are so many layers to every song on this record, much more than Changes, I think. I think Changes really felt like it was straight ahead and more organic than this record. And I could be totally wrong, but that's what I felt. How much of that is you, and how much of that is Dave Friedman in the mix adding stuff? Or was there not a lot of stuff added afterwards?
So Friedman's mix definitely opened up the space of the record. He made it sound huge, and he sort of blew everything out and did what he does really well. I'm a big fan of his records that he's produced and mixed over the years. So I was really thrilled that he worked on it. But yeah, I mean, there were a lot of instances where he had added effects and we told him to just sort of return to what we had. Because we recorded the entire record to tape, which is actually a departure from Changes, because that was a hybrid tape digital project. But this project, we got to the point where we were finished with the band tracking on 8-track, and it was time to bounce to the computer, and I was just like having a crisis. And we saw a 16-track 1-inch machine available. Actually, we had to buy two because they were being sold as a lot. And wow. So we bought those machines and finished the record analog.
So that's all you, mostly you on like, well, we'll get into some of these songs. But the dreamscape thing is real. The whole album has this layer of, I don't know if it's smog or fog or haze, but there's this whole, it's kind of like 10 cc's I'm Not in Love. There's this whole.
Oh, thank you, dude. Wow.
Do you know what I mean though? It has this whole, and it's sometimes when you're singing, but sometimes it's just overall, there's this just, maybe it's fairy dust or something. And I assume that was purposeful, right? I mean, there was a reason for that to happen.
Well, you might be hearing the tape hiss too, because there's
considerable noise. Maybe it's just tape hiss, yeah.
Well, I'm in love with that to a degree. You know, we couldn't avoid it though, because we bounced from, you know, it was like a second generation bounce to another tape machine. So like immediately the noise floor is increased. But no, like the fact that the process of recording was dreamlike and feverish. And I think that comes through because we were just up recording for 13, 16, 18 hours at a time.
Wow.
Oftentimes only at night, especially the overdub sessions when I was doing vocals with Sergio, and he would be here. Yeah, I mean, it would just be the two of us, like, for 10 hours doing vocals and going crazy. And but, like, you know, getting it right. You know, there's no auto tune on this record. I'm really proud of, you know, what we were able to achieve, because it was just, it's just us, you know, together doing it.
There's no auto tune, which is great, but is there some on the vocal, there is something going on, or is that just naturally your voice? Like, or is there something, are you singing through something on some of the songs, or is there anything else going on, or is that just your voice, your true voice?
Well, I mean, we definitely utilized the EQ on the mixing board. Used the, I mean, we were mainly using an 1176 compressor.
Yeah.
Sergio and Mike Novak, the engineer, both were experimenting with microphones, and a lot of times we were using a ribbon in tandem with a dynamic microphone, and we were achieving some really cool sounds. And then also, the machine that I used to demo the record is a Otari 8-track. That basically became a tape delay. So we were able to just utilize that as a delay unit. And that has a very unique sort of, we were able to achieve some almost like Norman Whitfield style delays with that.
Let's get into some of the songs, because I have, like I said, I've listened to the record, I don't know, a lot. And I have notes on every song. These are just like visceral reactions to every song. So if I could take you through them and then have your visceral reactions to my visceral reactions, that'd be really fun. Alameda Apartments, the title track on the song, Love Gone Bad, obviously. Thrusting, powerful piano, but also some organ parts on the overdubs. There's also lots of syllables to get through sometimes when you're going from verse to get into the chorus. Was that tricky for you to spit out some of those words?
Yes, especially harmonizing those. That took an extremely long time for me.
But now that you have it down, it's just second nature, right? I mean, it's just in live performance.
It did take some time to get that up live too. That was kind of scary to perform live, but that was the first batch of the new material that we started performing live this year.
Problems is a poppy 70s tune. Is that Fender Rhodes that's leading the way, or is it something else?
That's a Wurlitzer.
I always get the two confused.
Very similar.
But you're channeling your best Elton John. I mean, that's where that comparison comes in, probably, on that tune more than any.
Yeah, you know, I think there were a lot of things that I kind of wanted to send up. Some Fleetwood Mac vibes. I was thinking about Sly a little bit. I was thinking about a lot of different kind of elements there. And then, of course, the synthesizer was another one of those just late night, 6 a.m. weirdness.
Can't Stop the Rain is just amazing. And you have an amazing guest on that record. How did you hook up with Mr. Derek Trucks, who apparently now is Eric Clapton's favorite guitar player? How did you hook up with Derek? And was it him recording at home in his studio and sending up stuff? Or how did that whole thing happen?
I got connected with him through Jesse Lauder, who also connected us with ATO. So he, you know, he's a great friend. It was just, we had finished the track to an extent sent, I was sharing all the mixes with Jesse because I value his opinion. And he was like, this would sound great with Derek Trucks. I was like, oh, really? That, I think so too. You know, like, but then I guess I didn't realize that he had, he's worked extensively with Derek and Susan as a producer of their live material. And he just also, I've got to plug his film that just came out about the Mad Dogs and Englishmen reunion, which is wonderful. But long story short, yeah, he sent the track to Derek and Derek was like, I'm into this. So yeah, that was actually the one element of the recording that we didn't do in Chicago, that was tracked by Derek and his engineer in Jacksonville. But I got a chance to talk to him.
Yeah, so. Such a sweet guy, right? I mean, such an amazing.
Yeah, really.
And I guess if you're going to make an exception for something to not be recorded at the church or in Chicago, it might as well be Derek, right? I mean,
indeed.
That's fair. Yeah. I don't know how to pronounce this. Art Agnan?
D'Artagnan?
Yeah, sure. Let's go with that. It's a palate cleanser, an instrumental just to sort of refresh, I guess. Is that the intent there with that tune?
Yeah, that was one of my tape demos, actually. I created prior to the whole record, and it's the fourth track on the record, and I named it after the fourth musketeer, D'Artagnan. And yeah, I was just messing around with some synths,
yeah,
and having fun.
That's great. That one.
There's a lot like that. I've got so much in the bag like that. I could release a whole record of that kind of crap.
Prometheus is a great tune. And what's really great is that the guitar solos on top of the piano solos or nearby the piano solos are just very tasteful, I found. And I know that it's hard when there are competing leads, when the piano has to compete with guitar. Was that something that you sorted out? And it's a good time actually to talk about the rest of the band here, because I would imagine that that's something that you have to sort out while playing these songs live so that nobody sort of takes over each other's lines, right?
Yeah, we're all generally pretty good at not stepping on each other just because of the we've had, we've all come from like the steady jobbing gig background, playing any style around Chicago. And that's a big faux pas, is to solo while somebody else is soloing. But that track was finished. And then the Leslie guitar with Kellen was the last thing we added. And I was just standing there next to him, like directing kind of, or like just doing an interpretive dance as he played that part. Yeah, it was fun. Another 3 a.m. session.
Of course. Sentimental Garbage is another throwback tune, but this one does have a lot of production and layering. How many different synthesizers, pianos, electric organ, whatever, how much is there? I mean, there's a lot, right?
Yeah, there's definitely a Roland Juno 6 pad. There's a Moog sub bass. We use a Moog Model D on the entire record. And there's the piano, which we played through. I think on that one, we played it through like a really shitty, like, powered speaker. But it was our touring piano, the CP70.
Asleep is the soul tune. How hard is it for you to hit those higher notes? I mean, there's quite a lot there for you to tackle. Is that something that you enjoy doing? I mean, it sounds great, but it must take a lot of discipline to get there.
That was just another one that, I demoed it out. It was pretty rough on the demo. And then when it came time to track, it was just, I really leveled up. I feel my singing abilities because we just stood there as long as it took. And I've gotten a lot better at also just warming up and learning how to sing. So yeah, we enjoy singing that one live too. Yeah, because the guys have really copped those backgrounds well.
Right. Is that hard for you as a new discipline to take care of your voice? I mean, you are performing late at night. You're doing, you know, even this record was recorded in the middle of the night, and it's a lot to ask of yourself and your voice to get through some of these songs. How disciplined do you have to be with your voice? Because now you're on tour, and I mean, it's as important as the other instrument that you play.
I mean, it's progress, not perfection. I like try to eat well. I try not to smoke cigarettes too much. I try to, I definitely warm up every day I'm singing, and the whole band warms up together. And I'm really grateful for those guys and how willing they are to do that. Because we've all come from nothing singing wise, and now it's starting to sound presentable. So
I think it sounds, yeah. BNLV, there's, I don't know if it's pedals or what's going on with the synth, but there's definitely some shape-shifting going on some of the things going on. And my other comment was, it could easily be a Burt Bacharach tune. And it does have that, again, that 70s pop feel. Am I right? Is there pedals, or are you're doing something with some of the organ stuff there, or synth stuff?
First of all, thanks for the Burt Bacharach comparison. He's one of my favorite songwriters of all time. But we use an ARP string ensemble for the outro jam section. And that's going through a phaser, like a phase shifter. So that's probably what you were hearing there. That was a late addition too. That was like, that one was already done. And I'm like, wait, let's try this shit.
How much of this shit that you've tried and done, like in BNLV, shows up in the live performance? Is it hard for you to bring all of this production, and is it necessary to bring all of this production to the live thing, or is the live thing so different from what's down on wax? Well, in this case, not wax, but tape.
We haven't tried to fully reproduce the record. I know a lot of bands that need to have it sound exactly like the record, but we present versions as a four-piece that I find really compelling in their own right. And then we've also done performances with a six-piece live band, adding Cole and Emily, our friends here in Chicago, and then we can sort of add in some more of the instrumentation.
And what do they play? They play other instruments, or is it a horn set? Like, what do they do?
They both play keyboards and sing.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Why in 2021 aren't there more piano or keyboard upfront rock bands? There are so very few bands like you, or artists like you. There are very few in the rock genre now. Why do you figure that is? I mean, there are terrific players that play as part of an ensemble, but there's nobody leading the way. What's that about?
I can think of, like, you know, Corey Henry or PJ Morton. Those are band leader players who are like far beyond what I'm capable of. But no, I don't know, man. It's like, I really loved Elton John and Alan Toussaint, Dr. John, and Billy Joel, of course, and Warren Zevon played a lot of piano. I'm glad that it's sort of unique, you know,
yeah,
because there's a lot of guitar playing guys out there, and And like, even coming up in the scene in Chicago, it was advantageous to play keys because there's so many great guitar players here. So like, it was easier for me to get gigs, you know?
Is that stuff that you grew up on, Toussaint and Dr. John and Billy Joel and Elton John, or is that stuff that you sought out on your own? I'm always curious about, you know, I know what I grew up listening to, and it's, you know, I didn't have to seek too much out because I've grown up listening to a lot of this stuff, but how much of that is discovery and how much of that is just inherently learned because it's stuff that was going on in your house?
My parents brought the lion's share to my attention growing up, but from there I've done a lot of exploration and developed my own tastes. You know, I'd say I'm way more into jazz and fusion and funk, sort of the cutty 70s stuff like Donald Byrd and Roy Ayers than my dad ever was. You know, like Les McCann and I don't know, Herbie. I love that stuff too. But I love so much stuff. We could have an entire podcast on that. Just you and I rapping records. That'd be fun.
Yeah, it'd be great. It's clear that you have a ton of influences and are continuously being influenced. And that comes through in the music. The plan now with the pandemic over is to continue touring this record. I noticed that you added more dates. Is that the plan for a while now, is to be out there as much as you can touring this record and letting people know about Neil Francis?
Yeah. I'm super just grateful that we're out there playing again. And we've probably played a lot more than many of the bands that were friends with this year, and we kind of got a head start, and that feels good too. But yeah, I mean, you know, I want to play as much as possible. I love it.
And you're always writing down ideas or always recording demos and stuff on your phone or in a notebook? Is that an ongoing process?
Absolutely. And there's a ton of demos that didn't make this record, and then there's also three additional tracks that didn't make the record, not because they're not good, but just because they didn't really fit the overall aesthetic. You know, there's a lot in the can, which I'm grateful for. Like, I always try and have, I don't want to ever go into a record with nothing.
Yeah.
Like coming into this one, I had some written, which just helps me feel more secure about the process. Well, at least I got this one. You know,
when you say you have stuff written, I'm just curious, is it more of the lyric stuff that you have written, or is it more of the melodies and some of the music that you have written? I'm just curious about that
part. Well, I mean, in my process, the musical portion comes first.
Right.
However, there were some fully completed songs and demos before leading into this record. Sentimental Garbage was one. Almeida was another one.
Cool. Thank you for a great record. I want to hear some of those other things, so don't hold on to them for too long. Like, let's get some B-sides out there. Thanks so much for taking the time, dude. Continued success. I see nothing but the hockey stick curving upwards for you, man. And I'm glad that we were able to chat pretty early on in the ride. And hopefully we'll be able to do it again as the climb continues, man. So good luck and congratulations on a great record.
Thanks, Ira. Thanks for the kind words, man. And hopefully we'll get some more attention from Hockey Night in Canada.
For more on Neil Francis, visit neilfrancis.com. And with so many tour dates booked well into 2022, make sure you catch him on the road. Before we leave you, have a listen to another track off of In Plain Sight. Here is Alameda Apartments.
I'm moving to Alameda Apartments. She took all my things and left our place in flames today.
If it hurts, well, it's too so low. And in the end, I let it go. And as much as it hurts, it remains to this day that I love her, and that stays just the same.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.